Blog Talk Radio.
Today is December 12th in the United States. It's December 13th in Australia.
This is Cindy F. Solomon from the Global Product Management Talk. Delighted to be with you today. We are speaking about taking a fresh look at product strategy with Prabhakar from Austin, Texas. And joining us today, our co-host is Nick Koster from Sydney, Australia, at BrainMate. Welcome. So today we are talking about taking a fresh look at product strategy with
Prabhakar, like Bob Barker. Go Holland.
Product strategy is a topic in the minds of everyone involved with developing and selling a product. Most product failures are attributed to bad strategy. This discussion will take a look at product strategy from a fresh perspective, from that of the experimental school. We'll compare and contrast the experimental approach with the more prevalent God complex approach. What we share and learn could inspire us to challenge and test our approaches to strategy as a practice going forward. So if it is your first time joining us, you should know that this is a Twitter discussion taking place at the hashtag #ProdManagementTalk, ProdManagementTalk. You can view the website with the same acronym, ProdMGMTTALK, .com, for more information. Prabhakar is a strategy consultant based in Austin, Texas, and a corporate strategist at Dell. He founded Whole Mind Consulting, an innovation-driven management consulting firm. His experience spans working in a number of roles in product management, product marketing, and consulting services at large and small technology firms. He is a popular speaker at Product Camp Austin. His blog postings can be found at the popular product management blog on productmanagement.net, as well as at buildingfour.tumblr.com. So welcome.
Thank you, Cindy. Thank you very much for the warm welcome.
We have warmed up by talking about the weather.
Sure.
First question for discussion is, who owns product strategy in your organization? Is it product management, product marketing, or development? And doesn't matter who owns it. Welcome John Peltier from Atlanta. John Peltier just came into the room. He says, hello all from Atlanta. Product manager, marketer, strategist here, catching a few tweets in between bites. So I'm sorry to overlap with your dinner time. Welcome Roger Coven, who is also in Austin. He's a product strategist and manager, and he's dropping in before he has to run out to a meeting. So thank you for joining us, Roger. Welcome Han Sholender from Shanghai, Nihai. He's a product director at Starry Media, developing marketing tools for Chinese social media. Awesome.
Yeah, that's a great answer from Roger Coven on the team owns, but has that been his experience or is that what he desires that to be everywhere?
I think that was kind of my feeling as well. Once a product strategy has been defined, everyone should be able to own it and engage it. It's not something that should be, you know, kept in a lockbox somewhere. But I think your question more is who actually defines the product strategy from the beginning?
Sure. If you ask me, defining strategy is not a unitary effort. You know, it's not a one-person effort. Roger is absolutely right. Everybody should own, but everybody should be able to define it too. And that's a very tough thing to do in most places. It's easier in a startup environment. It's easier in a quote-unquote a social organization for everyone to define and own, but extremely hard for that to have that culture in a large organization. And majority of product managers work in large organizations. I don't know the exact numbers, but I would hazard a guess that most of us product managers work in large organizations, and that's the case. Most of us are here looking at a strategy team doing it, right? I work in a quote-unquote corporate strategy team, and then I work in business with business units who all have individual business unit strategy teams. And then they have product strategy. You know, there's like strategy is just overused in so many places, so many strategists. It's almost to the point like that is the biggest hurdle in getting anything out the door because too many people are strategizing versus doing something, right? It takes forever to just get the strategy right. And that's the problem. There is no right strategy. So it's a combination of those. The ownership part, the definition part, if only that part is like relaxed or made free without those bottlenecks and let people be free enough to go and quote-unquote experiment, then the solution is in, you know, right there in front of you.
So how we say that one of the challenges of the strategy is that it's being done independent of the doing?
Absolutely. It is, yeah, it's almost like, you know, there's the silo organization. So there's a strategy organization or strategy people, and then there are the product management people, product marketing people, product development people. That's just not going to work. It isn't working, and it will not work either. And more, we're going to see all of these being integral. So if I really want to think of the future would be the single person learns enough to be able to do multiple things. So there is the space where the deep expertise is required. But I think, so here's an example. Product management talk isn't a fairly complicated exercise. But Cindy is there. She's running the marketing of it. She's running the product development of it. She's doing the PR of it. She's doing the quote-unquote strategy of it. She's wearing multiple hats, and it's very scalable. She's done the whole experiment, if you permit me to call that an experiment.
Thank
Cindy.
You. Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah, the whole year you've done it. And you found success over experimentation iteratively, and you've done it. And so would you then say, oh, my expertise is only product management. I'm going to go hire a product marketer to do this. I'm going to hire, that kind of disaggregation of core activities is not going to work. It's the future is about how one person can take up multiple things and still be able to do, great work. And I think that we are at the phase where people will learn many things, would like to, you might be an expert at one of the six things you're going to do, but the need of the hour is for you to do all six in some levels. It's not going to be, I will only do blah, and, I will not do the others. That's a very large company thinking, and that means you're siloing your activities and you're unable to actually coordinate. But if you do a little of everything, you'll eventually get to a point where you understand the entire flow of it.
Wow.
That makes sense?
Yes. I just wonder how that works in a huge organization, though.
Yeah. So if basically large organizations now have to rethink strategy like a small organization. They have to disaggregate themselves. Instead of solving the problem for scale, they have to start solving the problem in a very smaller problem level. I don't know how to explain this. But they got to solve it for use by smaller groups. And when they see the effectiveness of that solution, maybe then they can scale it. And I think product managers have probably the biggest impact because they've been in these of advisors advocating, here's how you do this, here's how you do this. They have a good 360-degree view of the organization and the activities. They're probably best suited to go and lead this change in organizations. I think product managers are best suited for this.
I agree.
Another problem with large companies is they silo out product development or product current activities versus they call strategy a long-term exercise, right? That is actually also incorrect. Strategy isn't a long-term exercise. So they claim there is tactics and there is strategy. Tactics is for short-term, strategy is for long-term. That's just bogus. If you don't do things right in the short term, then how can you do things right in the long term? Or vice versa, right? So the fact that the short term and the long term are just your own definition of things in the timeline, you're better off forgetting those two definitions. Instead, focusing on, for example, what is best for the customer? Would you do this or would you do that? Those kind of approaches might be better, in which you learn something and then go and develop the next piece, is actually a better approach than chalking out a three-year plan, which we'll get into later in the other questions. But again, so what happens is, back to the question, people take strategy on one side, and then they go and do all the work for what would come in 3 years from now, 6 years from now, and all that. And then they let the people who are doing the product, they have in-depth knowledge of the product, in-depth knowledge of what the customers are doing, what the users are doing, what the buying cycles, what the sales. They have good knowledge of all of that. And they're just made to do maintenance while others go and figure out what should be next. That's not how it works. Because those very same people with all that insight and intuition and experience are being separated out from the future, from the innovation. That's a very wrong way to look at it. It's like, I have the R&D team figuring out things, but I have the development team that's just doing code maintenance or blah, blah. This is also negative. We want the same team that develops a product to also know what's... So if you don't develop a sick product now, you don't have to worry about if the product is going to be there 3 years from now. If you develop a product that is... product that is agile enough, you can continue to build on it and move it along the way or change it, right?
So, but isn't the point of a product strategy to try and define where your kind of what the goalposts are that your product is trying to achieve in the long term? And the tactics or the short-term actions are the steps you're taking towards that long-term goal, the longer-term goal.
Sure, that's a good question. My only answer to that is only if you know where your goalposts are. As bizarre as it might sound to most people who are in the planning department, I would just say I don't know what my goalposts are. For a moment, forget the goalpost. You know, what's your goalpost? Are you claiming that $3 billion next year is your goalpost? So I would just say remove the goalpost. Let the customer determine what your success is. It's a very different way to think about. And over I hear about the goalposts being revenue numbers and profits and margins and all that, right? Those can all be manipulated very easily. The one thing that cannot be manipulated is what the customer talks about your product. You cannot manipulate that. The customer knows about your product and will talk about it. Everything else, the financial numbers, they're all accounting gimmicks. You realize that 10 years later, somebody did something in accounting. But what do we want? How do we want to address that is by always working to the customer satisfaction.
I'm trying to keep up with you.
Sure.
I'm trying to tweet what you're saying. I invited people to listen in. So let me post Q2 and go back and read some other responses because you're already speaking to Q2, which is how many of you write and follow a strategy document? Does it actually work? So I think you are a little bit ranting about how you feel about strategy documents. But let me go back a little bit. And Roger had said that a product manager informs product decisions with market knowledge and strategic insight from his experience. He finds that unilateral product decisions don't stick. And he also recently blogged about who owns the product, which was relevant to this discussion. John Peltier says that in his current organization, the product management team, along with the CEO, has ownership. Roger also said, now I do believe the product management role brings skills to the table ideally suited for helping to define strategy. And Hans Helander says it's important to distinguish ownership from involvement. My experience says collective ownership is not easy. So there was a little bit discussion about the collective ownership, where Roger says he agrees that collective ownership isn't easy, but it's often the only way to run a truly effective product effort. And
okay, that's the book that has stuff on Roger. Just ask the question. He's curious about what I think about positioning. So Al Reed Trout, this is a very famous book, by the way. Positioning, the Battle for Your Mind, is a classic. His question is what I think about, in my opinion. So I have the book. You can tell him that I have the book in front of me. It drives all product decisions and lies at the root of the strategy. So my answer to these things is that there's a positioning school. Again, if you look at schools of strategy, which Mintzberg writes about in many, lots of, but there's a very good book called Strategy Bites Back, and he explores all the different schools of strategy. And in that, he talked about the positioning school, and he talked about the experimentation school, all that. My problem with all these positioning is that you have to, in positioning, you need to know where you're going. It's very, very important. And you take a very predisposed position about things. Right? That is what positioning is. You go and you position. It worked in the very Mad Men-esque period of time. I'm not sure if, I love Roger, but I have to say, I am not sure if that same positioning, it's very advertising focused to me. It could be social, but is that how we want to build products? If it is not backed by the customer satisfaction around it, or the customer experience, or the who we are actually serving, it then becomes like it's one side of the coin. Positioning is just one side. I think we need positioning, but the other side of the coin is really the customer. No matter what your positioning is, if you don't have a customer in sight and who you're going to serve, then positioning merely becomes a game rather than true benefit. There are lots of fans for Al Reed and Trout, as you can see John Pelt here saying. So
I think that Roger Coven brings it up every week.
Okay. It used to be a different, but my point is that alone is, so in this context, let me talk about, for example, you go to any, I think we have the strategy document question here, right? So here's the problem with the strategy document. There are three elements in a strategy document that typically people talk about. One, they use Porter's forces, All right? And then two, they use the SWOT analysis. And three, they do the road mapping, like, you know, where the vision and all that stuff. My problem with all these three elements are the following. Porter's four spy forces is a very, very, very static view of, extremely static view of strategy. It has zero innovation around it. The sense of innovation is simply gone. The sense of what the dynamic marketplace that actually exists today is gone, okay? It was 30 years ago, he figured this is how huge vertical companies like retailers or, you know, other similar, you know, monopolies, duopolies could put barriers of entry and things like that. Those things don't exist anymore. So why do we talk about barriers of entry when they don't even apply anymore to us? So the five forces as an example, right? So like this, those concepts are just irrelevant, completely useless. So Porter should take retirement, in my opinion. I'll be very strong on this. And stop advising companies. That's my two. And also MBA schools should stop talking about Porter's five forces. Completely irrelevant. And you see, you know, 60-year-old, 70-year-old, not to talk about the age, it's just that they have been immersed in this kind of ideas 30 years ago, that now they are 60, maybe they were 30 when they did their PhD, and now they're all talking still about, many of them, professors in business schools, talking about Porter's forces, and I'm like, it is too irrelevant today. Is Facebook competing with Porter's five forces in their head? That's my question. So the companies of the future aren't talking about Porter's forces. That's one. The next one is the SWOT analysis stuff, right? That, again, is very static. You almost assume that your competitor is... So, first of all, there is a very huge confirmation bias. Confirmation bias when you do the SWOT analysis. There is no element of behavioral economics or behavioral strategy in SWOT. It's all the problems that behavioral strategy tells you about strategy, is what is embedded in a SWOT analysis. A good place I would like to start about is Daniel Kahneman's recent work, Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow. That's one good place. And, you know, 20 years ago, whatever, Guy Claxton wrote something about harebrained and tortoise mind. Those are excellent places to go and look for why strategists, this whole Eugene Fama idea of this rational, efficient market hypothesis, is to look at the Nobel laureates who went into creating all the problems in the financial markets, bond trading, from long-term capital management, the Merton Miller models, all these guys, right, the economic wizards of the day, all of them were based on very faulty analysis of situations. And this is the same thing that product managers are force-fed into doing. The filter of it comes to these models which have no relevance. So I went all around the canvas here. So that's the third point is the roadmap, right? I know there's a question further down, but my view of the roadmap is a map is a static representation of a functional, you know.
Okay, let me intervene a little bit here so we can bring other people into the discussion. I'm encouraging them to listen because you're speaking so fast it's hard to even keep up with what you're saying to tweet it out. But I do want to include the people who came in to converse on Twitter. Why don't we skip to before you're about to answer, Q5, does your business have a long-term roadmap and what value does it provide? And thank you to Nick for rewriting the question so we can fit it in the Twitter. So we're skipping to Q5. While you were speaking, Saeed Khan came in, and he said that he finds writing a strategy doc helps to clarify thinking and brings focus. It's not so much about what you do, but why you're doing it. Aaron Managers came in to the room. They definitely want to participate in the talk with you. I have posted Q5. Does your business have a long-term roadmap, and what value does it provide? Saeed says, passion is great, but I need to slow you down so everyone can catch up with you.
Yeah.
Be sure to watch the Twitter chat to make sure that when I'm quoting what you're saying, I'm not just making up stuff that's entirely wrong.
Oh, right. No problem. I appreciate that you're actually tweeting stuff, so thank you. Oh, I love that. Thank you very much about the Facebook thing. Not that I actually know. That's a good question, but Nick, you know, that's the kind of thing you got to ask. You know, if you go to a startup and ask them, like, you know, how is your product strategy business? Most people are going to say, I'm going to test out this idea and see if it works. And then they learn something, and then they go test more. That's how most people build things. The time for this, for all of us right now, for product managers including, is to build things. If an idea is to build things, So stop this whole thing about planning and, you know, strategizing. Strategy should be really about innovation. That's what it is. So we got to go and figure out how to create things. You can create things by sitting in that cube and imagining things. It's got to actually work somewhere. Are there customers for it?
Well, I think that last question is kind of the strategy question that I like to try and start with. Before I start trying to build anything, I like to try and imagine that there's a customer that has a problem that might need
a
solution.
Sure, that's not a problem at all. Yes, of course. Everything comes out of some imagination. But my point is that that cannot be the strategy, right? That imagination leads you to create something, and then with that part that you create, you go and experiment, you test, and you learn, and things like that. It can be. So let me explain using an example, right? You have a product that already has 500 customers, let's say, right? You can have a strategy tomorrow that says, here's my strategy about this product that will change its picture to 2,000 customers or 3,000 customers, all these goal-oriented strategies, right? They call it now SMART goals because they are simple, measurable, blah, blah, ART. All these monikers, all these things, they're almost force-fit, like the anagram part of it, all these things. They are not making any sense. Like, you know, the SMART goal approach is another...
To me, the language that we're using here around what's in a strategy versus what is an objective are two separate things. So I might have a strategy to try and solve a particular problem in the marketplace, and the reason for doing that would be to try and meet an objective for the business.
Sure.
But I don't think I think that the strategy comes before the objective. So the objective is okay. Once I've decided on a particular strategic goal, what business objectives do I expect to achieve on that pathway?
Yeah, I just think that the future is going to be more than just so you limit yourself to these objectives. My point is that those things have limits. If you truly want to be innovative, you just have to look at the reason I'm talking about innovation is because innovation drives creationism, destruction, or, you know, this whole creative destruction cycle. And if that is the case, then we should be looking at ways to solve problems more than just 500 to 600 or 600 to 700. All these goals that we have, which drive strategy, to me, we are better off not setting goals, instead looking at something more deeper. It's like saying, I'm going to have a spreadsheet to figure out I don't want to, you know, use this example. Somebody used this. And like, you know, you're going on a nice date, let's say, okay. Right? You can't use a spreadsheet to figure out what's the cheapest place, best place, or, you know, how you would calculate there are going to be places where you're going to, you know, that's why I'm saying we have to more and more use, that's how people react too. That's how our customers react. Our customers do not react all the time based on spreadsheet models. They react based on relationships. And if that is the case, there's this huge element of behavior, people's behavior, both the buyer and seller behavior. So I think we have to take this huge component of behavioral strategy or behavioral economics into the whole process. And once you do that, you realize the models that we have don't actually work for those because they're all set on very static, rational ideas. And markets, customers are much more dynamic and much more, you know, they change faster. So the point is, do we figure out what kind of models should we have for that? Or are we better off just continuing on the path organically, right? So if you look at evolution, right, how species came about and all that, it was continuous innovation of the organisms and its parts and, you know, other things. It did not happen because the primates decided someday in 20 million years from now, we are going to be humans. That never happened, right? They were just going each time to an optimal form from where they were, continuously evolving. That's the same way I look at it. So some species couldn't survive, they died. Some species evolved and became better. The same thing can be applied to businesses, same thing to organizations. The things that don't do, that adapt themselves better, will survive. And how do they adapt? They don't strategize to adapt. They are faster in terms of their agility. So the more, they don't have a master strategy is my point. They evolve. Where the wind blows, they go along that. That's the point.
But I think if we start basing sort of evolutionary strategies around it, evolutionary strategy is based on a lot of waste. A lot of stuff dies and a lot of stuff gets killed before a successful strategy is identified. And I think part of what we're trying to work out with a business strategy is how do you preempt that wastage by looking to the market first and then making decisions about what actions and pathways to take.
I think you hit upon a very important point about wastage, right? This whole agility, agile stuff, for example, in development, software development, or in manufacturing, lean manufacturing, is all about preventing that very wastage, right? So you stop wastage by experimenting in steps versus planning many years ahead. Otherwise, you end up like Boeing, you know, the Dreamliner 787. They had to repeatedly give, I don't know, like five times they had to go and say, this is a release date, and could never meet it because they were planning too far ahead. And something as complex as Boeing, to give it to Boeing, it's a very complex, complicated project. So, which project of that scale has been delivered on time? You always see that projects of these massive scale, because these are all huge planning exercises. That is why. So if you had less planning, I would say we'd have more agility. And agility will determine the direction where it goes. It's hard. I think the more we embrace it, the better it is for us to reduce waste. Otherwise, we waste a lot. Boeing is that example of wasting. I'm sure they initially predicted, you know, whatever their costs were going to be. And then the final costs were probably not that. I don't know the exact numbers, but...
I think that you're answering also Q6, how does organizational design affect strategy? Would like to go back to Q4 to hear from people about reasons their product strategy failed, or if you want to go forward, Q6 or Q7?
Both are among my favorite questions. Actually, all 10 are, but... How does organizational design affect strategy? I think we could just give a plug to Conway's Law. Poor Conway. He's not quoted in many places, but I would like to see this more and more people looking at it because this also tells how this, you know, siloed organizations, hierarchical organizations, all these are examples of, they produce products that look pretty bad. In a good organization, if the organizational communication structure, organizational structure, organization is good, you'll see that they're more likely to produce good products too. That's why, you know, agile teams produce good software versus waterfall method if teams are. That is because of how the organization design is also is part of it. So what I'm advocating here is really this. The flatter your organization is, the more collaboration that the processes drive, the better the products will be. If they're all, you know, walls between organizations, very linear, the supply chain model, A to B to C to D to E, it's going to fail because the guy in E or F of that cycle doesn't know what A is. And you have to hire an expensive consultant to come and tell you, oh, just outsource A or take out the costs of B, neither of which is the right answer. The true answer is looking at the whole system, and that requires system thinking. So strategists for the next century should be system thinkers who can see the whole system and the interaction of these systems and collaborate, be transparent. Those are things that, one example would be the whole agile development movement is an example of that. And I think we're going to learn a lot from how software is developed, not just for software, but for the rest of the world in many things. I think there's an excellent post by Mark Anderson in the Wall Street Journal, an excellent post, you know, what software can teach or something like that. I think it's very relevant to where we are.
Okay, let me take some comments. Eid would like to know, can you define strategy from your perspective? A lot of what you're mentioning sounds more like execution than strategy.
Well, part of it is true. I think strategy is more about experimentation. So it should be about, strategy should be about experimentation, should be about innovation, should be about creating things. It is not about execution, no. It is about really rethinking. Strategy is about rethinking how we approach product development. It is about things. It is not something, you know. It's not one thing. It is about a bunch of related ideas. It's like a canvas. You just paint and you see it. You see it when you know it. Or you know, you know whatever that comment was, right? So to me, strategy, that's why Mintzberg's comment about strategy is about, strategy is typically emergent, where you look back and you see all these things that have happened in the system because of their interactions, and that's what created that strategy. It's not somebody with an intent went about and said, do these six things, this is the strategy, and here's the outcome. That's how product managers are made to approach this subject. Just turn it around and say, I'm going to do this, see what happens. Well, I'm going to do this, see what happens. Maybe change it. So you tune, change, and play this thing in that whole playground, playing in this lab And all these things are happening, and wow, you realize that along the way you have created some successful things, and that's because then you go back and see why exactly that happened, maybe because of this, maybe because of serendipity. So let's not ignore serendipity in this whole thing, which I'm a big believer in, that the serendipity, like, you know, evolution had serendipity in it, right? So everything we talk, all the great entrepreneurs you have seen had hugely serendipitous moments in their life, in their business life. They were not strategists. They were just very lucky. And they admit it. You go and ask some really successful entrepreneurs and they'll tell you they were just lucky. A, that's because they are very humble people. They have the humility. And B, it is true too, right? But you go and ask the same question to a strategy consulting firm and they will say, well, we gave them this PowerPoint which solved their problem. There is the answer.
So Ede had asked, he wanted you and Nick to compare your definition of strategy.
So I've just posted what I think product strategy aims to try and achieve. So I've said product strategy is what outcome does the product aim to deliver to the market? What problems will it solve and for who? To me is what a product strategy is about.
Okay, thank you. Sure.
And I've tried to differentiate that from objectives in an earlier post there, where objectives are how do I measure my success against that strategy?
Right, sure.
So if I was to direct my actions to solving a particular problem in the marketplace for a particular market segment, my objectives would tell me whether or not a certain number of people had that problem solved and to what level did they determine that problem to be solved successfully.
Okay.
And if we've done it well enough, how much did they pay me?
Sure, that's a reasonable approach.
Yeah.
I think the part that most people are uncomfortable with is the idea that people want definitiveness. People want clarity in like exactness of things. And I want to reply saying that there is no, we don't live in a world of absolutes. There's always, like people want a black or white kind of answer. And I want to tell them there is no pure black, there is no pure white. Again, it's truly, everything is relative. Black, I can show you a more black, I can show less black. So what is black then, right? Black compared to this. It's the same way. So we are in the world of relativism. And if that is true, then all these exactness definitions just go away. We are too, we just want the absolute, absolute. There's this, and that's a very, very, I have to say, it's a very Western thinking. Now, I'm not the first person to say it. It's, you know, it's a very Descartesian, the whole Cartesian product, right? It's a Descartesian approach, right? A point can be the coordinate X and Y. That's Cartesian product, definition. X and Y on a graph. It's measured by its coordinates. That's a very, very Descartesian approach to things. The reality, though, is it doesn't exist at X, Y. There are other variables. That's X, Y only in two dimensions. In three dimensions, you need Z. In N dimension, you need N coordinates for it. Where are you going to go find those coordinates? That's the same thing with values, right? So on one hand, you have values. On the other hand, you have some set of measurements you think is true, and then you're after financial markets, all these things. I'm not talking something very fuzzy. My problem is that we try to this whole reductionist linear thinking is what results into a lot of problems that we face. So we're trying to put quantitative measures around quality. That's the human struggle today, my humble opinion.
Okay, go back to asking, do executives in your organization empower line managers and developers to experiment? Q7, are you interested in knowing people's experience with experimentation?
Oh, let me be more interested in what they say. I don't see that many people sitting here. So
they're trying to keep up. So Ede and Liz and John Pelletier, they are in the room. So Ede says, for me, strategy is a framework to guide decisions, what to do, but also what not to do. It can change with new information.
I think that's perfect. I think, you know, I would agree with Saeed on that. If he wants to use a framework to guide his decisions, but allow for it to be changing. So it depends on how he's permitting that framework, as he calls it. So it could be a language problem here. And I don't want to be dogmatic on these words, but if he allows it to be changing continuously, then I'm fine with that. But then who am I? That's his strategy. So he can, you know, run it the way he wants. Fine line between strategy and fantasy. Sure. I've read that post because he referred my presentation in that. So it got a lot of comments. I tend to agree more with Saeed because he's very pragmatic and more. He's not an extremist like me. You can tell him that, no problem.
I'm doing that.
Saeed is a true pragmatist. But then we need some pragmatists and we need some extremists too. Otherwise, the world would be just full of pragmatists. We don't want that. Or extremists. We don't want that either. So that's what I'm trying to say. Strategy should be respectful of diversity. So once you model something, models do not respect diversity. They just create the same thing over and over. So you outsource your operation. The next door neighbor outsources their operation. Then the one after that. So you got 10 companies out of the 10 top 10 companies, all outsourced. There's the differentiator now. Everybody got the same advice from the same company. That's my point I'm trying to say. Like all these strategies, so strategy is not a differentiator. Unlike what many people think that strategy is a differentiator, no. Strategy is very copying because strategy is a model that other people copy and then it's just the same. Instead, if you had the idea of learning and doing things, those things are harder to do because you're continuously changing, right? You're continuously doing different things. That's harder.
Well, because how can you quantify experimentation unless you're a scientist?
Well, if you look at experiments as science experiments, then it's hard, right? But if you look at your approach towards products, building products, as with a very learning objective, if your objective is about learning for the fun of it or for the desire of it to see if it, is this actually changing the behavior of a customer, or is this making a customer, or who you're trying to serve with that product, is this helping them do something better? You're learning something in that process. And then you go and do something.
But part of that process is that before you start with a particular idea, you would say, I think this is the outcome that we're going to achieve. Then you ask the market, then you test it to see if you're right or wrong. And that's kind of the way of exploring stuff. And along the way, you discover other things as part of that experimentation process.
Agreed.
I get nervous when I see one of the phases in market research is completely undirected market research, where you're just sitting around listening for stuff or looking for stuff randomly, hoping that something comes to mind.
Sure. Yeah. There are companies that spend a ton of money just wanting to do market research on things. And because market research companies do sell that as what they want to sell, right? They have to earn their living too. So they go and sell big marketing research. So consulting firms, quote unquote, sell their studies. I don't want to name which firms, but they sell their studies and the details behind it. Like they have studied this market, studied this particular problem. But I'll caution the whole hypothesis. Oh, you have a hypothesis. People apply these Pareto rules, the 80-20 rules, which is another drawback that consulting firms use about hypothesis testing, right? They already predetermined that 80% of the problems are most, if this hypothesis is validated or not, we will be solving the problem. But there could be many hypotheses that you haven't even encountered or are aware of. What do you do about those?
Okay, so I am skipping to question 10. Given the short amount of time left, question 10 is, if there's one experiment you do tomorrow, what would it be?
Okay, example would be, I try to learn something that I'm doing right now. I'd like to just go and change it a bit. Or very simple things I would like to do. I don't want to do anything very complicated. I try to do simple things, a little change, and see if it has an effect and learn from it. But you know, I'd wait for the other guys to answer.
John had said, in answer to question 10, A-B testing of my product, if I had the infrastructure in place, would be the experiment that he would want to do. Nick says experiments should be initiated to test a hypothesis. Along the way, other insights will be unearthed. I don't think you were ever suggesting that you shouldn't start with a hypothesis. Were you?
Me? No, yes. I think you should. Everything is a hypothesis. So some people say it as hypothesis. To me, they are experiments too. The reason I don't emphasize so much on hypothesis is that hypothesis-driven testing is a very common terminology used in consulting firms. And I'm not a fan of that is because they're so blindsided by the fact that there is more than what they know as hypotheses. So they have standard hypotheses they always test. My problem with that is your knowledge is limited, and so what you will test is also going to be limited.
Mm-hmm.
So it requires a much broader way to embrace what you will know or learn. A profit equals revenues minus costs. So I'm going to test the revenue side. I'm going to test the cost side, see which one is going up or down. So if my hypothesis is costs are going down, are they going down or going up? So I'm going to go check costs and then drill down. That's a very, very static view of things. That's only possible to solve problems of one type. This whole problem scenario with the set of hypotheses they have. That doesn't lead to creationism as such. To me, that's a very dead way to look at things. You can look at things. That's how most companies were doing in the past, and they will still do, no problem. But there's no such problem, for example, for Facebook to see using this kind of hypothesis. So Facebook could not have been created, in my opinion, based on, oh, my hypothesis is people blah, blah, blah equals A minus B. I'm going to go down the A tree or the B tree, the issue tree, or the, you know, there are many things. Even if you didn't go through this example, there are other models similar, but none of those would fit a lot of the future companies we think of, or future ways to solve problems are not within our knowledge sight.
Sure, but I think that one of the differences in what you're talking about is some of the examples you're talking about with consulting firms and looking at costs, for example, and objectives are very much business strategy, financial strategy, internal management strategies. Whereas I think when we're talking about the product strategy, it's very important to think about the marketplace and the customer. And I think you're talking in that direction, but some of the examples you're using as counterpoints refer to internal business thinking rather than product thinking. I guess I'm interested in trying to separate the two, because I think product managers will be focusing on the product, the market, and the market growth, so more of the revenue side of things. And the business strategy and business management will be looking at how do we reduce the costs and increase the efficiency of the operation of the organization.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, so there's a strategy pyramid, right? There's a corporate strategy, there's a business strategy, there's a product strategy. And so there are strategies at every level. Agreed. I think you hit on the point, like, you know, you have, you know, financial aspects to it. It's all fine. I don't disagree with you, Nick. It's a fair comment.
Yay!
Jose Briones came in and he says that time for experimentation needs to be built into the roadmap. You should include a soft launch and a hard launch. That's... And so he wants to know, when building a product, how do you know how little to make it before releasing it to market?
That question.
Jose says you should use a small scale regional overseas launch as an experiment. And he says Orkut was launched by Google at the same time as Facebook, but it failed due to lack of experimentation.
Yeah, well, I don't know the reason why Orkut failed, or Orkut took off in Brazil, I believe. It's very popular, as well as in India. So I'm not sure about why it failed, all these things. But what I would say is ideas on building time into these launches for these experiments is great. That's one way to solve. I mean, ultimately, you have to get more practical, too. You know, most of what I've said is fairly abstract at this point. How do you get it into a working version of it, right? And I think his point is right on. And then about the using small-scale regional tests and things like that, absolutely. That's what companies need to do. So if I want to revise the product go-to-market strategy for, let's say I carry five products in my portfolio, one product is not doing well, I'm not going to go and change its entire go-to-market for the global thing. That's typically how large companies approach. What they should be thinking about is, how about I change only in Austin or in one city or one place? So his point on regional approaches towards experimentation, right on. I mean, I think part of it is that technology is now allowing a lot of these to happen at this scale and at this kind of, that's the biggest advantage we have. Like, I think John Pelletier mentioned about A-B testing, right? That's an excellent example, right? You can segment your users and they completely see different sets of things, and you know which one worked, which didn't. And so all these ideas of ways to segment and test different populations are excellent ideas.
So Ed had asked, how did Facebook out-experiment Orkut? He's not clear on what happened, or maybe his Facebook versus Orkut question should have gone to Jose Briones, who said Google is desperately trying to catch up with Facebook. And John Pelletier said, how little green space are launching with established competitors? I guess he's questioning. No Shame Creative asks, what would be your best tool of influence if your hypothesis contradicts your current process or ideas? Cam Brentley said, for me, strategy is how to focus our actions to achieve a specific outcome, simple, actionable, moldable, and evolving.
So, okay, that's very close to a SMART goal, but I'll give it to her.
Yep. Okay. I want to say that we are past the hour already. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, we start slow, and then now everyone is warmed up and wants to continue.
Sure, sure.
So,
yeah, I think I slowed down talking, and actually you see more comments pouring in. That's probably
right.
The lesson I learned today is to shut up and listen.
Oh, but you were excited. You had a lot to share. I did post somewhere in there that I'd like to try some more experiments with other platforms to continue this level of talk. And as I had mentioned to you earlier, that video chat, there's more and more free tools that are offering better experiences that make it conceivable that we could go into a virtual room and have a conversation that we could capture for ongoing conversation. So that's on my roadmap.
Maybe we could do the Google Hangout thing. I've never tried it, actually.
I haven't tried that yet either.
Sure. Nick, thank you so much for tweeting. And
a pleasure.
Cindy, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to join your party here. So I'm delighted to have been... Is this the last presentation for the year?
We have one more. Thank you for asking me. Next week, we were talking about the marketing myth and how many P's there are these days. Are there 4 P's, 5 P's, 8 P's, and do any of the P's matter? Do they make a difference?
I like the last question better, as you can imagine.
Right.
So thank you so much again. Once again, I appreciate the opportunity, and I'll connect with you after.
Great. Okay.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you, Nick.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.